And here we are for another par train. It's just Strat and I. Serm couldn't make it. What's going on?
I'm feeling good. I'm feeling really good about this one, actually.
It was raining earlier. Now the sun is shining.
Welcome to LA, baby.
I know we say this all the time, Strat, but I think we agree. This is by far one of our most favorite interviews that we just did.
Yeah, this. So we sat down and chatted with Eric Anders Lang. You might know him from Adventures in Golf. You might know him from Vice commercials. He basically is the guy that gets to do all of the really awesome golf shit that you wish you could do, but you just don't have the time. Thankfully, though, he records most of it on YouTube or his social media platforms. And we dived into some good shit and we had some good conversations. And this was a fun one. It was enlightening on a couple of different levels.
It really was. I mean, he got picked. He attended the Masters for the first time as a media member, and he was one of 29 of 800 that got picked to play Augusta the Monday after the Masters. So we obviously talk a lot about that. He talks about what's better to play, St. Andrews versus Augusta. Might be surprised by the answer.
Mm-hmm.
The next best golf trip you've got to take.
Oh.
This one, I mean, you know we would go tomorrow.
Yeah.
If we could.
Yep.
Pro shot bonanza at the Masters, how much he spent, what he got. I think we rank our best golf items that you want to get.
Yeah.
When you go to a famous golf course or golf shop. That was interesting. And then which Adventures in Golf episode should be made into a movie. And spoiler alert, we might be on the next episode. We had a pretty good idea for him and he liked it. So
yeah. So yeah, just sit back, pour yourself a beverage and enjoy because this is a good one.
All right, let's fire this baby up. And we are back for another par train. Guys, this is a good one. Just a few LA golf guys talking golf on a rainy day. Eric Anders Lang, potentially the most interesting man in golf. How's it going?
Wow, that is such a bold introduction. I mean, I do admire the beer campaign about the most interesting man in the world, but I don't know if I could live up to that. I'm good, though. Otherwise, I'm good.
I'm going to just jump right in here with the first question.
He's been dying to ask you this.
Yeah. You, Eric Anders Lang versus Hans Christian Andersen in a fight to the death for the most Scandinavian name of all time. Who wins?
I mean, like, what kind of fight? Is it just like a linguistic fight or am I getting in there with like toenail clippers and shit?
It's going to be murder and it's going to be any tool that you can grab within a 2 foot radius right now.
All right. Well, right now I've got a 1 liter glass bottle of water and he's going to get that to the cranium. Here's the thing. Hans Christian Andersen was no joke, like 6'8" and I'm maybe on a good day, 5'11" and 7/8". So, you know, like I'm 6 feet, but it's a lie, you know? So, So I'm going to need to really be like wide awake for this fight. The problem is it's the morning and everything's a little blurry for me. So,
sure.
Whoever's going to win, it's going to be a long battle.
Basically, you're saying buy the pay-per-view and we'll find out.
Yeah, I'm saying the quote is, who said it? Oliver, he said, if it's you against the world, vote for the world.
I think that was Fred Durst. Fred Durst said that.
Fred Durst, yeah.
Yeah.
Limp Buzzkill. All right.
Strat, did you pick up on the glass water bottle? I mean, he's a health guy. He's a healthy guy.
Yeah.
Paleo cookies.
Reduce, reuse, recycle.
Yeah.
Reduce, reuse.
Yeah, it's a low alkaline water.
Sure.
Thank God.
All right, so.
Full Los Angeles.
Eric, I got to address the monkey in the room, okay? You did two full podcasts on it. I listened every minute, okay? You got to play Augusta National. We've got a million questions around the experience. I'd say to the listeners out there of the par train, if you guys want every shot, details on every shot, go listen to the Eric Lang show. Okay. We're not going to do that here. We're going to do a little bit more high level takeaways. But first and foremost, Strat and I, we want to know about Pro Shop Heaven. You described the experience as, quote,
right,
it was like I was on bath salts about to eat people's faces. And I can totally empathize with that feeling because that's what it felt like when I was in St. Andrews. So what did you buy? How much did you drop? And tell us about that experience.
That is a very solid question, but it's like, so basically, you know, when you get to Augusta National as a media member lottery winner, you're 29 out of 800. So the 29 people who get selected, it's kind of like the leftovers. Like, you're all sort of like, what am I doing here? Have I been selected to live on a higher plane? But the problem is you're not quite in heaven yet. So they give you exactly 60 minutes prior to your round to, you know, just mess around and do whatever you want. And I went into the pro shop. And so the deal with the pro shop is, it during the week, it's master's gear. And you can't even get in there during the week unless you're invited by a member, like a green jacket. So, but on Monday morning, they start switching it back from master's gear to Augusta National Golf Club gear. So I went in the morning and they were like still switching it over. And I was kind of like, guys, let's get it moving here. You know, come on, like full Rodney Dangerfield. Like, hey, let's get the good shit in here, you know? And I was like, what are we going to have? Bucket hats, rain pants. I'll buy everything, you know? like a bowl of soup. I don't care. And they were like, you know, we're working on it. And like, fully just like glaring at me. So then I went back after the round and the experience, have you guys been?
No.
Never.
Okay.
Next
so when
year.
You go into just even the merch tent at Augusta at the Masters, you know, the common equation is I'm going to spend X. And then as soon as you walk in, you're like, I'm going to spend 1.5X. And then as soon as you walk out, you realize that you have actually spent 2.3 to 3X.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And usually when you go in, X is a high number. X is hundreds of dollars, maybe even thousands if you're living like that, which I'm not. So when I went to the Masters merch tent, I spent 300. I said I was going to spend 300. I spent 600 2 years ago. This year, the Augusta National Pro Shop, I was like, I'm going to spend 1,000. And I mean, I had to get, you know, like 9,000 hats for everyone I've ever met on planet Earth. so I left spending 1,500. So, yeah, I got a little bit silly in there, but you know, it's one of those things where you're like, you're in the pro shop and the thought that keeps coming to my head is like, I'm going to die. I should spend the money. I'm going to die. I should spend the money.
Exactly. I fully back that philosophy, especially because, like you said, if it's the Augusta National gear versus the Masters
stuff,
it's even more hallowed territory.
I honestly have asked people, I'm like, I don't know if this is a problem, but I don't know what comes over me when I walk into a famous golf shop. Like, for example, I played King's Barnes in Scotland, which is super expensive, and I'm sitting in the pro shop next to my playing partner, and there's this like super light white and red Stratzine the jacket that's like 350 pounds, and I'm like, oh, I don't know.
Like,
I mean, this jacket is incredible, but I don't think I can spend that. And the guy, my playing partner, looks at me, he goes, you only live once. And I'm like, all right, I'm buying it. I don't know what comes over.
Right.
So actually, I wanted to ask the group before we move on.
I think you have a problem.
How would you guys rank like the must-have golf gear if you're going to a famous course or event, like by item? Like, my ranking is hat number one, ball marker number two, quarter zip number three.
Quarter zip. Oh, cool.
Quarter
cool.
zip. Yeah, a little zip up.
I'm going ball marker. Then I'm going hat. And then I'm probably going to try to find like a nice poncho. I don't know.
Oh, poncho.
I think if I'm at Augusta National, I'm getting a fuck ton of ball markers, and I'm going to get probably 30 hats, a big hat guy. And then after that, you know, I'd probably black out and see if they had like a butt plug. I'm not sure.
Solid. Nothing like a hand engraved butt plug from a nice Scottish golf course.
Yeah, like classy, a classy one, you know?
Yeah. Okay. So for me, I'm looking at belts.
Oh.
I love a good belt. Yeah. Oh. I'm going Peter Millar, $100 belt. And if they're solid, I may leave with two. then I'm looking at weather specific items, right? Like if it's chilly, I'm going to get a knit, like, you know, winter hat, maybe with a pom pom. I don't know, you know? And then I've learned to stay away from golf shirts.
I agree.
I don't know. They get sweaty, they get ruined, and they're hard to accessorize. You got to build an outfit around it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I fully sympathize with that. I saw the shirts on like Instagram posts, and I thought to myself, I don't want any of those fucking shirts, even if they've got the logo on.
No. Also, but what I will go with is typically like a sweater. I love a sweater. Sweaters are nice, you know, because it's like, because that's the thing you like, you wear on the first tee and you're like, yes, I played whatever. I'll tell you the story. Would love to tell you the story. Obviously, that's why I'm wearing the shirt. Basically, basically a sweater from a golf course is like, ask me about fill in the blank.
Now watch me hit these drives.
Now
I actually do back
the grandstand.
I do back the sweater because I found that I haven't been able to find a good golf jacket that's actually heavy enough that still doesn't restrict your swing. So I have all of these light jackets because, you know, LA guy. So the sweater underneath that jacket for those really cool mornings is perfect.
Exactly. Love a good sweater. And then I'm going to do, you know, bucket and or dad hat. Ball marks for me, I don't really care. I use a tee on the green. So I don't, the ball marks get lost and then I have anxiety about it. I have a couple ball marks that I've saved over the years, but it's kind of just like a revolving musical chairs kind of thing.
Yeah. Yep.
That said, I did get exactly 47 ball marks from Augusta National Golf Club.
Okay. So that's like 6 months of ball markers right there. So you, as you mentioned, you had a very unique consumption of Augusta and the Masters this year. You were given media access. You know, you're out there covering the tournament, you're having to be very cognizant of everything that's happening as far as the players and the full week goes. And then of course you strike gold when you get selected for you know, the lottery to play on Monday. You mentioned that, you know, Augusta National, if it was a public course and Pebble Beach was private, the prestige would be flip-flopped. So given your, like, the way that you drank in this course, this, you know, while you were there as media and then as someone that got to play it, how exactly, dive into that statement a little bit more if you don't mind.
Sure. Well, first off, I didn't actually say that. I heard someone else say it and I agree with it, I think. But, you know, the one big thing about me is I'm a huge contradictory hypocrite. So if I say something, I very likely actually feel the opposite way. And I'm not being sarcastic. Like I do believe in the, you know, I really try to always maintain the ability to change my mind or have my mind changed in a discussion. But yeah, I was with a gentleman who lives up in Monterey, and he was saying how, you know, Pebble, if you put a wall around it, would be better than Augusta. And, you know, I think he has a point, but I don't know if I agree 100%. I mean, the layout of Augusta, getting to experience that with my feet and my body was maybe actually, it's a really good question, was maybe the most interesting experience overall, was walking down the center stripe since I hit every fairway right in the middle. Just kidding. But like, you know, being able to actually traverse the golf course. I mean, it's just a hike. It's a trail, you know? And that was one of the more unexpected parts of it. You know, I think I lost your question, though. What was it exactly?
Just, you know, like what is the mystique of the place? You know, like we see it as fans, and like everyone can probably describe their favorite holes more accurately on that course than any other. So viewing it as a member of the media and having to be, you know, attuned to the tournament itself and then getting that opportunity to play it as a fan, what were some of the insights that you gathered that, you know, kind of either, you know, propped up your ideas that existed before or something that changed your mind completely on a conception you had previously?
Right. Okay, cool. Yeah. So basically I was there for a week, almost a full week with my media pass, and that enabled me to, like, you know, basically go to a lot of places, you know, obviously the course, to like some of the, I could go in the clubhouse, I could go into the media center. And I think why that's relevant is because the clubhouse and the media center are, in a lot of cases around the world, those are places for people to hang out. They're quiet. And they also, on some level, have a finger pointing to the history of the club, which I think is, it's very hard for me to get erect, if you will, for a course that's like 8 years old or 25 years old. I mean, I love the history of golf. I love old golf courses that are still functioning in a way that like supports the, you know, reverence that we all have, even as young guys in Hollywood, you know. But in Augusta, they've taken the, you know, they've taken that element of history and really like highlighted every aspect of it in a way that, you know, when you watch it on TV, you even get it just in the music and just in the footage of the shots, like of the holes and of the trees. Like it all feels very historical. And so in all these places, they're very close to museums. And I think that's the Augusta experience in a lot of ways. It's like, oh wow, this is like a graveyard of golf history. And you can walk through it and look at every headstone and you can see a date and you can see a name and you can relive these stories that, depending on how old you are, you may have seen on TV or firsthand or read about. And so that takes up a large part of the actual anticipation of playing Augusta, because you're thinking about all that. But once you walk on the first tee, like it's golf, like it's golf. You're Tony Finau. You're going to hit a bomb down the left side and you're going to try to pull it back in, you know?
Yeah.
And then there's the 2 minutes between the shots where you are reminded, oh my goodness, oh my goodness, oh my goodness. But then you get back to the ball and it's like pitching wedge, like just up, just, you know, wind coming off the left, you know?
Yeah.
And so that was, I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting to literally be in like an Oasis greatest hits album of just like emo golf, like crying. That didn't happen. Like,
you kept it together.
It was just fully like a golf round that in some ways, I hope this doesn't take away from it for anybody, but the shots could have been any golf course, really. Like I really was surprised at that element. Like when you're standing over the ball, like it's just the ball and the turf and it's not Augusta anymore. It's not the Masters. Mm-hmm. So you kind of had this like bipolar experience.
I love that idea. It's like the world's most interactive museum that you could ever go to. That's awesome. I've never heard a golf course, especially a historic one, described that way. I think that's cool.
In some ways, it makes me a little bit like I wish there was a way for every person to experience that aspect of the photographs and the captions and the paintings and the magazine covers and like the ancient hole by hole descriptions and drawings. Like I wish there was a way for everyone to experience that. And maybe they'll come up with a way to do that. But, you know, that for me was really the highlight of the media experience, was being able to really wash myself in all of that history.
Yeah, Eric, I was just going to say when I remember you talking about this on your podcast, and I remember thinking, that's funny. You said like the magic of playing Augusta was actually more about the letter and being chosen than actually playing the course. And that reminded me, I got super lucky one time to play Riviera here. And of course, people are going to ask you, like, what did you shoot and what did you hit on number 10? But I actually say to people similar thing, where to me, the most memorable part of playing a place like Riviera was the aura and like the people. Because I remember sitting in the bar and people were like talking about their planes. And I was like, where the hell am I right now? This is crazy. And I'm sure there was a part
like
of that
paper airplane.
That's that was like it. I don't know. They just hit home for me. It sounds like you had a similar experience at Augusta.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's hard to like. There's so many different ways to talk about golf, you know, and the way that we're taught on TV and on social media is to talk about score, is to talk about shots. And so, you know, yesterday I was back at Wilshire, my home course in LA, and, you know, I ran into a bunch of people I hadn't seen because I've been gone for like a month and a half, and everybody was like, so how was Augusta? What did you shoot? Da, da, da. And like, you know, I mean, I've just got to meet them where they're at. Like they want to hear the holes that I birdied and bogeyed. I mean, one birdie, you know, like, and that's just like, that's just the way we're conditioned to talk about golf. And I think for me, that's been the most enjoyable part of like, you know, I guess my podcast and you know, like learning how to use social media in the first place, it's like, oh, well, this is interesting to me. Like, and I think hopefully it encourages more discussions like you're talking about you had at Riviera, because, you know, I mean, there's more to golf than just the score. There's so much poetry involved in the experience of that unknown.
So I couldn't tell if this was a joke or if you were being serious, but did Augusta actually make you switch from a yellow ball?
So all I packed was yellow and red golf balls, because, like, I don't know, that's what I ordered, you know. The colored ball has one technical advantage, which is I am one of the most impatient people like I've ever met, and the yellow and red ball allows me to see which ball is mine much faster. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I hate, like the worst thing is when you think you outdrove somebody and both your balls are white and you realize that actually they outdrove you, and here you've been walking with your chest out for the last 100 feet.
And now you've got to find a place to hide the body because you murdered your buddy.
But you get a free white ball.
Bounce it out.
So I walked on the first tee with my yellow ball, and then I walked, and then there was a member there, like, welcoming us and wishing us well and being really sweet. And I pulled out my yellow ball and I was like, oh my God, I may not be allowed to play a yellow ball. Like, and I immediately just felt like I had like a nuclear glow around me and the ball itself. And, you know, everyone was pretty happy and kind of like candid or whatever. But I walked up to the member and I said, am I allowed to play a yellow ball? And he looked at me and shook his head. I was like, I don't have any more balls. And then he cracked a smile and was like, nah, you're fine. Go ahead.
Guys, breaking fucking balls. It's real comfortable life when you got one of those green jackets in your closet, man.
Yeah, because it's like, hey, man, I just dropped 1500 in the pro shop. Would have been nice if you told me I needed some white balls.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I did get 36 Masters Augusta National Golf Club balls. And when I was in the airport, the TSA was like, he pulled them out and he was like, these look like nice balls.
You fucking shut your mouth and you're talking to me and drop those balls.
Get your blue gloved hands off my balls.
So we had a friend who's actually played Augusta before. He's been on the pod and he talked us through it. And one of the standouts from his experience was he had the famous caddy, Carl Jackson. His probably actually advice that I still hold to this day was Carl told him to treat the ball as his bitch and to compress it when he was he saw his short game shit. And his famous line was compress that bitch. So that's something I always try to keep in my mind when I'm around the green. And you had some funny stories about your caddy Brian, and I'm just wondering, you know, it seems like there's certainly probably a more unique brotherhood with the caddies at Augusta. Do you think that that's because of kind of an understanding of the history that you mentioned? Do you think that it's just because of the exclusivity? Do you think it's all of the above? Your thoughts?
Okay, well, on some level, the Augusta National caddy becomes your guru for the day. They are your only like clearly defined tether into either reality or fantasy. You know, they can take you either way. And, you know, caddies in general are such a weird experience because at a lot of courses, it's a make or break, you know, like the caddy can literally turn it into a novel or they can turn it into a horror film. You know what I mean? Like,
totally.
And I think on some level I've tried to learn over the years, like, I'm not going to let that happen. Like in this situation, I'm going to, you know, try to just include them in whatever experience I want to have, you know? And Brian, my caddy at Augusta, was, maybe a few years earlier, if I had met him, he could have maybe ruined my day, but I was like, I'm not going to let this happen. Like he was, you know, he's one of those guys, just like hard to like, you know, really crack open, you know, like, yep. And it took a while. But you know, when we did finally get on the same speed, like his excitement over my excitement and over like the photograph taking like incessantly, the talking about the history and the, you know, all these other great things, like, you know, you kind of forge a friendship that will never go away, at least, you know, for the guest on that day. But yeah, I think the thing that Brian said to me that really stuck out to me about golf was I had a crazy putt that like I could not believe broke a cup left. Like I was sure it broke two cups right. And it was at the top of the fifth green. I was in the back of the green pin high and like had like a cross country, like maybe 25 footer. And he was like, I was like, great read. We drained it. And he was like, oh, you don't read these putts. You remember them. And like, I know that that's common knowledge. Like obviously there's practice rounds and people are learning about the putts, but I think it was the way he said it. And just the almost like not taking credit for it. Right. Like there's no mystery here. It's all about, yeah. And in a way, like you don't read the putt. You remember it kind of goes back to the whole history of Augusta National, like the 80 years. Like, it's like, you remember the things about this golf course. The stories are remembered just in the way that the putts are, you know, like, so Brian was really wonderful at delivering those moments to me as a guest and, just being my guide through the day. You know, one of the caddies was actually a friend of a bunch of friends of mine, which was really random.
Small world, 6 degrees of separation. Kevin Bacon's in there somewhere. I think he's a member.
Yeah, it was Kevin Bacon. Is that weird?
I fucking knew it. Why didn't you just say it to start with?
So, Eric, we actually talked. I think we debated this on Instagram, and I thought it was really interesting, so I wanted to ask you here. Augusta National is super exclusive, obviously. St. Andrews is a public park, technically. You've played both. The commonality, I think, between both of these places is the people there are probably having one of the best days of their golfing life. So there's that natural energy, but I wanted to hear the difference in the energy of the exclusivity at Augusta with a place like St. Andrews.
Wow. That's a great question. St. Andrews feels a bit more like you're playing in a nicer version of like a picnic in this huge park where everyone's like hanging out and like grilling and talking and watching and looking, and it's a much more communal atmosphere where everyone's equal. The caddies themselves behave in a more in a less reverential way, and it could be the Scottish accent, you know, but you know, they know that you're a tourist as you're American, and they have stories to tell you that they feel okay with sharing. You know, the structures around St. Andrews are very inclusive, and it's very like the entire place is like a nest. St. Andrews is also very like, you know, you can see great distances, and over those distances, you see many other people experiencing perhaps what you're experiencing, which is I'm at the home of golf, like, and everyone's experiencing like emotional things going up and down that are, I found more emotional than playing Augusta. My experience at St. Andrews, and that could just be the time of my life, but, and St. Andrews has this wonderful, you know, when you come up 18, it's very emotional because you're like returning home and you've actually had this journey. Augusta is much more like a medieval ritual that you've been invited to watch a sacrifice. Augusta is much more secret. It's much more, there's a uniform, there's a code. The caddies are not going to really just chime in and tell you a story about that time they visited Tallahassee, where you're from or whatever. The lines of the golf course are much more mysterious. There's many more blind shots. The trees tower over you and make you feel really small at Augusta. Whereas St. Andrews, you're the tallest thing out there aside from like maybe a grandstand for the Open or like a massive gorse bush that's so far away that it's actually quite small. Whereas Augusta, you're staying next to a tree that's 220 feet tall, and you feel like a jerk. You know, like you just feel like a microscopic speck on the golfing universe. Whereas St. Andrews, you actually feel like you're about to win the Open. You know, the finishing hole at St. Andrews is quite easy. The finishing hole at Augusta is like rather difficult. I mean, it's a blind tee shot, and then on some cases a blind second shot up a massive hill, and you just feel like you don't feel like you don't belong. Because I did feel, they told me I was a member for a day, and I believe that, but you just feel small. And it's not like a bad thing necessarily. I think in a lot of spiritual practices, the idea is to feel small. So they're very polarized. Obviously for me, the weather had a huge part. At Augusta, it was very soggy and saturated and quiet. At St. Andrews, it was like I was inside of a jet engine that was blowing like, you know, like some type of toxic liquid in my face. So, yeah, I mean, they couldn't have been more different. And I would be very hard-pressed to choose, but I have to say, even though you didn't ask, I would probably be 51 times out of 100 at St. Andrews.
Wow.
Oh, I like that.
Okay, shots fired.
My favorite place on Earth.
Shots fired.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, you can't argue with dogs on the course, with bicycles on the course. Like, it's just older. Like, and if you could even just be like, respect, both are equal, I'll take the older.
Mm-hmm. So, kind of piggybacking off of what you were talking about with the history and the passion. I think one of the things, I mean, you do a lot of shit. Okay. You get to do a lot of really cool golf stuff. You've created the Adventures in Golf series, you know, like you've keyed in on something, I think, that often gets overlooked with the game of golf, in that, you know, it's often seen as this stuffy sport, rich old white guys, which, I mean, shout out to the rich old white guys, 'cause they keep the game alive. But, you know, I think,
love you guys. Let me know when you want to play.
Hey, Reginald, you let me know, brother. I'm right here waiting. But I think something that I've really enjoyed about the series is, you know, all of these different locations, all of these different experiences, it's consumption of golf and the game and the passion in unique and different ways. And it's put an image onto a way to enjoy the game that isn't being a country club member. And I wonder if that was something that you wanted to try to identify and you knew going into this experience, or if that's something that you kind of found along the way through all of these different adventures and stories that you've uncovered.
Man, that's a really good question. And, you know, I think what's been fun, great question. So should we end the podcast? Part two coming up. You know, it's a really interesting way to look at it. I mean, I've learned something interesting about myself, and maybe this is a way to metaphoricalize your answer, but a lot of times I'll be talking to someone and we'll be kind of riffing and making jokes, and then I'll just say something and then they'll be like, oh, that's funny. And I'm like, what do you mean? And then they'll be like, no, what you said, that has a double meaning. And I'm like, how? And then they're like, oh, they explain it. And then I'm like, oh, wow, that's like really funny. And like, I can't actually take credit for it because I said it before I understood what I was saying. And a lot of times that can get me into trouble.
Humble brag.
You know, there are times where I'm just, in the sense of the golf show, kind of speaking to this, you know, new generation, it wasn't really planned at all. Like, it was just like, it just sort of happened. Like, it was just, these are the things that I was interested in. And it wasn't like, I'm going to try to find the, you know, all these, I'm going to rally the troops of the munis, and we're going to play golf in the streets with our shirts off, and we're going to just like burn the flag of the old guard. It was never like that. Like, it was just like, this is how I think, you know, my favorite moment of talking to anyone really was Chris Berman. I got to talk to him on the driving range once.
Whoop.
And I was like, it was so cool. And I was like, dude, I don't know how to host a golf show, and that's my new job. And he was like, look, if you think it's interesting, other people will. I guarantee it. Just really make sure that you know that it's interesting. And it's been such a shock to me that people watch Adventures in Golf or that people care about it. And when and now I'm starting to realize it. I'm like, oh, that there is a theme among these things that I'm interested in, and I didn't even realize it. So that I think, does that kind of answer your question?
Yeah, I think it does. I think, you know, I like what you said. You know, you didn't start out to try to, like, you know, blow up the old guard. I think that there's one thing I've enjoyed about this series so much is there are so many different ways to enjoy the game. Like, I love sometimes playing the super stuffy, you know, old country club type courses because those are fun. There's history in that. Like, that life is foreign to me, so it's fun to pretend every now and then if I have the opportunity. But I also love playing a muni course. I love to play when I travel. I think what's so interesting to me is that there are all of these different venues and ways to enjoy and play and love the game. And I think that that's something that a lot of people don't realize. And I think that it's something that your series does. It sheds light on that. And I would hope that the more people watch it, the more people, you know, grow to enjoy this game, because it is so appealing for so many different reasons to a large swath of people. So I think we're on the same page is what I'm saying.
Yeah, the game has a lot of little things that everyone can enjoy. And I think, you know, we get it, not even just golf, but we get so caught up in life about highlighting our differences, you know. I mean, and the whole, like, contradiction of my life is really funny because, like, I never was a member of a country club. My family didn't play golf. I hated golf. Then I finally tried it and fell in love with it. And then I was at the driving range early on, and I was like, will I ever play on a golf course? Like, I literally thought golf for me was just going to be on a driving range. And then I started to play these public courses, and I was like, what's up with the private courses? Like, I'm not into that. I hate that idea. And now here I am paying dues at a private country club that I actually really love. And I found the people there to be really special. And for me, what I try to do with that is, like, now knowing a bit about what I guess my quote message is, you know, but what people want me to talk about to some extent. Like, I try to bring people into that experience as much as possible. And I think that if you really want to zoom out and look at coincidences, like, I think I talked about a little bit in the podcast about Augusta, but I really hope that on some level, like, I was able to bring everybody with me to Augusta, because going for myself and just going to play and being that selfish guy that's like, I get to play Augusta, you know, like, that's kind of sad. And in some ways, that's a lot of how people think golf is, because it kind of is. You know, it's rich people who want to get richer. But that's not everybody. That's not probably even the majority. So it's been really cool to, like, try to breathe in this, like, element of community even into the most private places. And I don't know, I think that for me, if the finish line is tomorrow, like, I will feel very happy about even the small part I played in that.
Yeah, it's awesome. Like I said, but before you and I met, I watched the series and loved it, and I think that it's good shit, and you should keep doing it, and if you don't, I'll fucking cut you.
I agree.
Piggybacking off of all of that, after we've just built you up sufficiently, if you had to extend one of the Adventures in Golf episodes and make it into a movie, which one is it going to be?
Without a doubt, Askernish. I don't even need to think about it.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. Boom, baby.
Yeah, I mean, so if you haven't seen it, this episode takes place on an island in Scotland. It was lost to the world for some 80 years. It was built by old Tom Morris and rediscovered by a random greenskeeper. And the owners of Bandon Dunes and Tom Doak went out and sort of assisted in the recovery of this wonderful old Lynx course that some literally call it the truest Lynx experience on planet Earth, because it has relatively been untouched. And the experience of that was the true definition of adventure. You know, I just looked at the definition of adventure the other day, and it means to happen by chance. And Esquernish, without a doubt, happened by chance. Sunday night, we're having dinner at 10 p.m. We booked a flight when I found out about Esquernish. Monday morning, we were on the plane going to visit this golf mecca, or rather Golf Atlantis. You know, I would want a hole-by-hole description. I would want so many more interviews about this weird town and weird place. It could easily be, you know, a 30 to 40. And if you really wanted to draw it out, it could be much longer.
Totally agree with that, by the way. That's seriously one of my, might be my favorite episode of the series. What do you think grows the game more? Okay, we're talking about what grows the game and looking at it from a different angle. This is going to happen on the tour for the first time in a couple weeks. Walk-up music. It was kind of our idea about a month ago. You're welcome, PGA Tour. Walk-up music at tour events or golf boards at every muni?
Interesting question. I mean, I love the walk-up music idea. And I think that the PGA Tour owes you about $17 million. So just send them an invoice.
Done.
Done. I do think golf boards have a large part to play in the experience of golf. You know, I don't know what growing the game actually means.
That's a good point.
I know what companies want to do, which is make more money. I don't know if I care about that. I don't know, watching golf on television, is that growing the game, or is that just giving bigger purses and making CDW have to pay more for ad time on a Sunday? If that's growing the game, I don't give a shit about it. I think growing the game is more about getting people to really enjoy the experience of golf, whether for the thousandth time or for the first time. And so I would say golf boards would probably have more of a part to play in the true experience of the game, right? Like, golf is such a puzzle. And we get caught up in like some type of board meeting, and it's not a board meeting. Those are companies. Golf is an experience that's in your hands, right? And it can be painful or it can be pleasurable, but it has no dollar value. And that's the sad part, is that we always quote declining numbers. And I don't really care about declining numbers. I think declining numbers are good for golf. They need to get their heads on straight and start putting out a good driver every few years or whatever. Like, the consumer is always right. So let's start telling them what we want.
Fuck yeah. I love that, because fuck that shit. It gets me pissed off when I hear that. And I'm like, God damn it. Like, I'm playing more golf personally than I ever have, so I don't know what you're talking about. But secondly, it's like the game exactly feels like it's never been in a better spot. I mean, we got fucking Big Cat back prowling the grounds. Like, it feels fun and fresh to me. And so I hate reading those kinds of stories and then have to like justify myself to like people that don't like the game or anything. So I love that answer. I fucking back it.
Yeah, I mean, I go to driving ranges. I go to golf. They're crowded, man.
Yeah.
You know, and there are fresh balls on many ranges, you know, and like, so it's doing fine. Like, I don't know, man. Like, yeah, it's a weird thing. I have a tough time with it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, that said, I do need the golf industry to do well in order to do my job and not have to like go work at Mickey D's, you know, but like, you know, I think that like, no disrespect to Mickey D's, I'll eat there when I'm in a foreign country all the time. I love
obviously
that place.
Obviously.
Anyway, I mean, you play yellow obviously and red balls.
There's
so,
nothing like a,
you know, it's on brand.
Nothing like a Big Mac in Japan. I'm telling you, going to Mickey D's in other countries is like a top choice for any true traveler. Anyway,
quick question. Is the McFlurry machine broken in all of the other countries' McDonald's as well?
I'm not like a big McFlurry guy, but for sure, like, the Big Macs taste identical, except they're served in like a different way, and it's all in that language, so it's super interesting.
Okay, all right, we'll follow up on that one then.
So yeah. I am as excited as Strack just was about your documentary Be the Ball. So I gotta ask you a question about this. I've been excited to ask you. For those that haven't heard about it, it's a documentary about golf and spirituality. Can meditation help you be better? Zen Golf personally is one of my favorite books. And these are two things that are really close to my heart. So without spoiling the movie, well, first of all, when is it coming out? I know it's next, it's this year, right? Do you have a date?
Man, look, dude, making a movie is like way harder than getting good at golf. I'll tell you that. It is, it is so hard. I made this movie like, you know, like on a post-it note, like a few years ago, and I've just been working on it. We've been shooting. You know, it's not like, it's not one of these, like we're funded by all these great people or companies. Like we raised some money. Like I did it online. I did it like through a Kickstarter. I like sold my body multiple times.
Sure.
You know, so yum. The hard part now is like, you can buy my body if you want. I'm happy to sell it. Just hit me up in the DMs.
Sure.
And, sure. But the hard part is finding the time, you know what I mean? Like really carving out the time. And we went through a few different editors and like, to some extent, like it's a big story about how meditation can actually help competitive golfers and just regular amateur golfers. We staged like a 50 person experiment where we taught meditation for 3 months to all these golfers and watched their stats become affected by the meditation, and the results were like straight up astounding. Like I was totally blown away. You know, and so, but on top of that, it's a story about my brother and I kind of becoming friends for the first time over golf in the middle of our lives. And that's something that I'm like eternally grateful for. And so there's a discussion within the film about, you know, what is golf? Like what actually is the game? It's different for every person. So when is it going to be done? I mean, I'm hoping the end of this year, but you know, it's just one of these things where I'm not going to release the movie if it's not as good as I think it can possibly be. And so if that takes an extra 6 months to really clear my schedule out to do it right, then so be it. I mean, I've talked with my producers and investors about it, and we all agree that so many great things are happening in golf in general right now that in some sense, the longer we wait, the better. I mean, you know, the story is only the seed of the film is only going to land in like more fertile, you know, soil, I think. So hopefully the end of this year, but it could be this time next year.
I mean, speaking of being erect, I don't know if I've ever heard of a movie that was made more for me than this. So well done. Can't wait.
Thanks, man. I can't wait to share. I mean, Adventures in Golf is so fun for me because I believe in it. And I really do enjoy it. But the movie is something that, like, I deeply believe that the world needs. And I think that when you're able to see the movie, I went to an outing, like, a few months ago, and I showed a rough cut to about 20 people. And we got to the outing on Thursday, played golf Friday, Saturday, and we watched the film Saturday night. Everyone was very mad because we should have watched this on Thursday night. And we should have been able to experience a new way to play golf, essentially, and like work through all these things. So I'm hoping that, you know, I've been really vocal about like, hey, let's all play golf together. You know, if you want to play golf, just let me know. If I'm in your town, we'll get together a random group of people and just hit it. And I think that the film can have that effect on any group. And I think that there becomes like a discussion around this stuff that hopefully will go beyond just like, oh yeah, it's a great movie, whatever. Hopefully it'll go into like you said, Zen Golf offers a new narrative.
For sure.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. I can't wait for it. When you first told me about it, I remember after, I believe it was midway through the round we were playing, and I continued to tell myself, you're a good putter. You're a good putter. And I still do the same thing today, usually when I'm putting like shit. So I can't wait to get all of the instructions so that I can hopefully round out the rest of my game a little bit more. But I'm stoked for it.
Well, and you know, you've read Zen Golf. So, I mean, if you're aching to see the film and you're listening to this, like, check out Zen Golf. You know what I mean? Like, Dr. Parent's such a good guy. There are a lot of similarities between the two. You know, so hopefully that can tide you over.
Sure. Well, look, we know you're a busy man. We don't want to keep you any longer. I just want to leave you with one final question, request, what have you. A possible next option for Adventures in Golf We are the PAR train. Okay. We're big train guys. Love a good train. You know, perhaps we all find ourselves on a train in Europe. We pull into a station and we play the first course that we can walk to from the train station. You know, just throwing it out there. If you need some adventures, we'll be there. We'll be on the train. I can bring a lot of scotch in my bags. I have a bag specifically made for scotch. So that always helps.
Is it like a bladder or is it like a bag that holds flasks?
Well, it's my latex bodysuit that I've turned into a bladder. So it passes through inspection pretty easily.
Fascinating. So do you incorporate the alcohol into your bloodstream through osmosis?
Correct.
That's great. That's an adventure right there.
There you go. So,
talk
so
about
zen
golf.
You're welcome.
I love the train idea. I mean, I think, you know, one of the things about this, and that's the good question about Astronish is really great, because like, it's hard to plan an adventure. It really is. And have it be interesting. We've done a good job of it over the past couple of years, but I think that's why Astronish is so special to me, is because it actually was an adventure. You know, like, I had no green light from central leadership before I went out there, and I was pretty sure that they were going to treat me like a fallen operative, and they were going to be like, we will not acknowledge this episode or that trip or these expenses. But I was just like, I'm going, like, we're doing it. And so the idea of getting on a train and just sort of going to the first spot, like, I would love to do that. You know, and I think it's been cool this year because social media offers such a way to connect with people. When we were in Minnesota shooting an episode, some guy reached out and was like, oh my God, I live an hour away or whatever. And I was like, come over. And we like, he hung out and like, we had friends in common. And like, I hope that there's a way to organically create each adventure more adventurous as far as the unknown. So, you know, I may post my itinerary pretty soon and just see like who's going to be where, because we'll be in Europe.
Und we like that.
I love it. Well, this was great, Eric. We appreciate you coming on. For everyone out there, he's a great follow on Instagram at Eric Anders Lang. Check out the Eric Lang Show, the new podcast, Adventures in Golf. And hey, guys, got a movie coming out, Be the Ball. Hopefully Sweet. We'll get out on the course soon. And thanks again for coming on.
Thanks, Evan. Thanks, Stratton. That was a blast. Let me know when you want to start the podcast. Have you been recording the whole time?
Ha 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 ha. Wait, what's a podcast?
Hey-o.
Thanks, dude.
See ya.